We continue now with Eileen Miles, the visiting poet, spring 2002 at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. She was the guest of honor and our featured poet at the 5th annual Allen Ginsberg Memorial Open Mic Poetry Marathon. I'm Paul Nelson. Well, let's continue now. One of the things about your sexual orientation, especially growing up in the time you did, tough to be accepted, and many people who are gay and lesbian being in the closet, and that still exists to a great deal at this time. But alcoholism was something that you had to deal with.
Tell us about that. Well, I mean, personally, I come from a long line of alcoholics, so it was hard. It wasn't hard to miss, but it's had a huge impact on my writing. Both, it was like when I was younger, you know, drugs and alcohol seemed like part of the mix of the culture of the poet. You know, when I got to town in New York, I felt I had a radical permission to drink as much as I wanted, and then. You know, learn that poets took drugs too, and that all seemed possible and good. And, you know, for a while it actually helped me write. You know, speed was great. You know, I mean, alcohol, maybe a hangover could be good when the coffee hit and you would hit this, you know, you would have a few hours of sort of really exhilaration in the morning. I mean, all these phases passed quickly, but there were a few years where it seemed to be very, you know, it was very friendly with writing, you know, and then that started to end, and then a lot of things started to end, and I was very lucky to see the writing on the wall and realize that if I didn't stop, I would die, like, you know, members of my family have. But then it became a whole, I mean, I read someplace that there are water poets and there are wine poets, and I felt that it was time for me to become a water poet, and so you kind of start to shoot for a kind of clarity, and my poems became less busy, and they moved differently, and they became longer, and they became thinner, and I became more attached to a visceral necessity to go out. That's when I really much more consciously began to go out and get a poem, and even change as a poet, you know, because, for instance, I got sober in the 80s when poetry was not at its popular zenith in New York. Like, the poetry rock moment had ended. And if you told, you know, this is like my joke about it, but if you told somebody to party in New York that you were a poet in the 80s, they would just look at you like you had said you were a mime. You know, it was not cool. And people, you know, the assumption being you were broke, you had a day job, and you were pathetic, you know. And so, but the performance scene was booming. You know, PS122 became the venue of you know, excitement in New York rather than the Poetry Project. And so I just hooked on to that and started memorizing my poems. And with the new expanded consciousness of the sober alcoholic, I could do that. I was much more aware of the visceral nature of poetry, of how much space was around me, of how political a situation was to look at an audience. Because once you put the page down, you stopped looking down, and you started looking up, and you looked at them, and you felt all the energy around you. So I really had 10 years of expansion that forever changed my work. I started memorizing stories. I started writing more stories. I started creating performance pieces that I toured then. So it was kind of suddenly, I mean, I grew up really fast and got pretty interested in the notion of selling myself as a poet, making a living as a poet, and thinking that you just really had to kind of reinvent yourself every now and then. And I continue to do that. And even running for president in the early 90s was part of that. Not so much the selling of Eileen as the expanding of Eileen and hitting a wall with realizing that, you know, there are political aspects to being female, to being 40, to thinking, oh, am I less cute and I'm on the cultural junk heap now? Or am I a candidate for American power? You know, so at 40, I ran for president, and that opened a whole other thing up.
And you didn't win.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I didn't win. But I'm not, you know, maybe I wound up in the preferred spot too, you know.
But perhaps that's the case too.
Once you run for president too, you're always a candidate. It's sort of like it seems like the continual biggest spot in my bio to this day, you know. So it's I will always be that poet who ran for president.
Well, we talk about that line of demarcation between poets, or those two separate groups, the water poets and the wine poets. There's a different and I think perhaps more meaningful sort of demarcation. If it's important to, you know, separate poets into camps, it's already such a small group to to say, you know, ooh, that poetry, that's, you know, come on, give me a break. But, you know, when you get a sense, when you get a taste of poetry that's really expansive and that that surprises not only you but surprise the composer of that. There's an expansion there. There's a liberation that happens there that doesn't happen with that other school of poetry, the poetry that I'm the poet and I'm clever and here's my clever mind and here's my poem that I've revised 347 times to to get every weird corner out of it. So what I teach in the schools is open form in American poetry, and it's a lineage that starts obviously with Walt Whitman, who the academics are now cool with.
Yeah.
You know, 40 years ago that wasn't the case. Goes through William Carlos Williams, and then in through the Beats, and certainly I would include you in that. And that's part of why you're here. And what do you say about those two divisions? Because obviously you're so solidly in the one school. In fact, very outspoken about other poets in that other school, the mind writing school, who think that the body is bad, it's stupid, which is something you say in your essay, "The Death of New England."
Right. Well, it's funny. I mean, like for instance, Robert Pinsky, who I have to mention that I met and had dinner with him not long ago and found him to be a terrific guy. I mean, I liked him. But he's firmly in that other school, and it was interesting to watch him be the poet laureate of the United States because he was doing a very people-oriented project, you know, and going all over the country and getting people to read their favorite poems. But I noticed when he came to my town, Provincetown, there was a big article in the paper about it all, and they made a very serious line, though. But however, you were not to read your own poem or a poem of your friend's, unless that friend was a legitimate poet. And there was that line. And I thought, wait a second, but legitimate poet, who is doing the legitimizing? You know, and I feel like to me that the power and authority to make that distinction is the distinction. It's like, I always think of Jim Carroll like kneeling down and reciting a poem at St. Mark's Church, and he was like asking permission, and he had this sort of Catholic boy need for permission, which I have too, and yet poetry has always been the place where I know I love it and do it because I don't have to ask permission. It's sort of like I'm immediately in line, you know? It's sort of like I just have to have the nerve to get in line or talk directly to all that I think there is, you know, and sticking Gertrude Stein in that lineage you mentioned, you know, sticking Thoreau in that lineage, you know, there's just a whole American strain that actually looks to the East, not the West, you know, and basically refers to a divine spark within so that each one of us has immediate access to the divine rather than to say, well, you know, the lineage of going to graduate school to learn from the great poet who might give me, you know, a little tap on the shoulder and then I can, you know, and then I can be published by X and win X and win X and win X. And when they say who she is, they will say, Eileen Miles, she won X and she won X and she won X. The poetic bio that lists awards makes me crazy. I think, were we Eagle Scouts or poets?
You got them on the badge. Mm. That's very interesting. You're talking about a hierarchy.
Uh-huh.
And you're talking about, you know, the Beats came in and, you know, I mean, reading poetry in public, you're like, you're reading to them, to the common people? I mean, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't understand poetry. And there's this elitism that comes from the T.S. Eliot school, that whole objective correlative kind of notion.
Yeah. I think to be a poet, in many ways, you have to forget about poetry. You know, it's sort of like everybody needs, in a way, I mean, it's like I want poets to hear my poetry, of course. But more than that, you know, I'm writing poetry for people who you know, don't know that they want poetry. And, you know, we notice, you know, when you do a reading, say, one of the nice things about having jobs that aren't about poetry, like, say, when I was younger, was that you would make friends with people at work, and then they would come to your readings, and they wouldn't be poets, and they would bring their boyfriends and their girlfriends, and they would always do that thing like, that was great, and I hate poetry. And it was just like that thing where, like, they just don't even hear it, you know? And I just feel like it's everybody's job. Distribution is the great problem of the poet right now, you know? And it's sort of like, it isn't so hard to figure out if you just stop being so precious about what poetry is and where it goes.
Yeah, but, you know, you talk about that end to hierarchy, and that's what the internet is about.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you just need two computers connected, and that's the internet. It's not this one monolithic thing that somebody can turn off. You know, as long as there's two connected computers on it, it's the internet, and it breaks. It's a whole way of breaking down and democratizing information.
Right.
So maybe this is the saving grace. In fact, I've heard, and I haven't verified this, that poetry is the second most searched for word on the internet.
Really?
Following sex. I think it's way behind sex, but that's what I've heard. I got to verify that. I got to find the source of that.